right. Well, it's nice to see you guys again this evening, and I was really looking forward to Philip presenting a great class on this topic tonight. But unfortunately, he kind of all of a sudden had to go to Tennessee again. Unfortunately, one of his cousins passed away, and so I'm going to be do some switching around, and we're going to go stick pretty closely to his lesson sheet. Actually, if you have that handy, you may want to pull that out. But we're kind of here at the end of I guess we kind of blocked off those six class periods that were I guess topical lessons there. We tried to stick with chapters 10 through 22. We're kind of at the end of that like six lesson block, and I thought it would be good for us maybe to revisit, I guess, the purpose of the book that we talked about way back in lesson one, and maybe just kind of think about the purpose in light of the things that we've, you know, the six topics we've just studied, and reflect on those just a little bit. If you remember back in the very first few verses of the book, back in chapter one, the first seven verses here, we're given a lot about the purpose of this book. You know, it's about knowing wisdom and instruction and insight, especially instruction in wise dealing, as the ESV puts it. So this is a very practical wisdom that this book is about. It's about, you know, navigating through life, living skillfully is how I put it, how I've heard it put before as well. And hopefully we've seen that in the things we've talked about. You know, we all have to deal with matters about money. We all have to deal with, you know, with speech, and we all have to deal with attitudes, and we have to deal with relationships like we'll talk about tonight, you know, matters regarding our work. Those are things we all have to deal with. And so this book is about being able to navigate through those things with wisdom. And I think we can see kind of the practical nature of it. Just if you recall these other words that are used here, like prudence and discretion. So, you know, having some sense, having some understanding of when to act, not to act, when to speak, not to speak. You know, it's kind of the idea of discretion and prudence. I heard the best definition I've heard about of prudence and is kind of the idea of being able to see the end of a thing. So be able to see that, okay, if I do this, it'll turn out this way. If I don't do this, it'll turn out this way. If I say this, it'll turn out this way. I really like that definition because it really fits with, I guess, kind of the way a lot of these proverbs are written. You know, if I have integrity, then I'll be secure. If I don't have integrity, I'll get in trouble, or I'll be found out. If I heed instruction, you know, this will happen. If I reject reproof, this will happen. You know, if I'm diligent, I'll have riches. If I'm lazy, I'll have poverty. So it's written, I think, from that standpoint, helping us to see, okay, if we act this way, this is where that will end up. And if we act the opposite way, it will end up here. So being able to see the end of a thing is really, I think, what this wisdom is all about. And, you know, I was thinking about this last couple of days that, you know, like out in the world, I think there's a lot of people who would agree with a lot of these teachings. They may not even know that these teachings come from Proverbs, but I think they would agree with a lot of them, you know, like the idea of, like, you know, if you're generous with the things you have, that will come back to you. You know, we see that teaching here. Well, people say that all the time about paying it forward and, you know, the blessings that will come on you if you do that. They understand, you know, to have good things in this life, you know, working hard is how you get those good things. So there's wisdom here that I think they understand. But what separates those people whose worldviews and ideas kind of happen to align with Proverbs, and then those who are seeking wisdom like it's silver, like this book talks about, the difference between those two is, of course, verse 7, right? That it's the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge and wisdom. So everything that we do, all of these things that we've talked about over the last few classes, all those things are through the filter of, through the lens of our relationship with God, right? That's really, I think, what separates, you know, this book from just, you know, general proverbs that are, you know, these are generally good ways to live. We do it because of who God is. You know, even though we know that it's wise, you know, we know the wisdom in that being diligent leads to these great things. Those great things, that's not why we're diligent. We're diligent because of who God is. We speak this way because of who God is, and we use our money this way because of who God is, and so that becomes the basis of everything that we do. And it's interesting, I think it's in chapter 2 where it actually talks about like this wise living or seeking wisdom. It actually then leads to a greater understanding of who God is. So it's like it starts with who God is, then you're able to live wisely, and that leads you to a greater understanding of who God is. So it's like it's just all connected and wrapped up together. So hopefully, and this of course applies to what we'll talk about tonight, which is our relationships. And you know, we're going to talk about friendships tonight. We're going to talk about parenting and talk about marriage. And of course, we could spend entire classes on each of those, but we're going to try to cover all three of those areas tonight. And like those other things, we're going to try to see him through the lens of the fear of the Lord. All right. Let's talk about wisdom and friendship. You know, the book has quite a bit to say about friendship, about, I think, being a good friend, choosing our friends. Can someone read chapter 12 and verse 26?
I will. 12:26. The righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray.
All right. Yeah, so what did we learn there about choosing friends?
You better choose carefully.
Yeah, we need to be pretty careful about it, right? Mine's worded a little bit differently. It says, one who is righteous is a guide to his neighbor. The wording's quite different, but I don't think the idea is far from it. You know, it's pretty clear that true friends are a positive influence for righteousness, right? So that means that, you know, when we're choosing friends, that, you know, we need to be careful in doing that and have some judgment there, because you know, there's going to be an influence either way, and true friends are actually a positive influence for righteousness. So we need to be careful in choosing our friends. What can we learn about, I guess, being a good friend from this verse?
We can bless the people that we are associated with.
Yeah, yeah. If one who is righteous is a guide to his neighbor, then, you know, shouldn't I be that guide that it's referring to here, right? And a blessing to those who are around me. So certainly, you know, we need to seek to be that. And then on the other hand, look for friends who are that same positive influence for righteousness for us. You know, we may have, you know, friends that, you know, we can have a good time with, we laugh with, but when it comes to guiding us toward righteousness, you know, not so great. So I think this book would teach that true friends are those who are a guide for righteousness, and therefore we need to make those choices carefully. In a similar, over in chapter 14 and verse 7, chapter 14, verse 7, it says, "Leave the presence of a fool, for there you do not meet words of knowledge." So, you know, we need to be careful with those who we spend a lot of time around, because their influence can have some negative effects on us. Again, we may have friends that, you know, enjoy laughing at, enjoy having a good time with, but it could be that their foolishness is leading us down a path that we shouldn't go down. So true friends are a positive influence for righteousness. Who could read chapter 17, verse 17?
I can read that.
Sure.
A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity.
All right. So what can we learn about friendship from this particular proverb?
That a friend is one who loves at all times.
Yeah, right? They're only there in the good times for you. You know, are they really a friend? Well, not really, right? I think the passage makes it pretty clear true friends are there for you at all times, especially the difficult ones. I think the passage may be suggesting that, you know, during times of adversity is maybe when the friend becomes a brother to you, right? That may be the time when you actually grow closer in your friendships is when you go through something difficult together. It's those times of adversity when you really need those companions and that support. So I think we, like I said, we really make great friends when we go through difficult things together. And I think that's what that passage is showing. All right, and then finally, who would read 18:24?
A man who has friends must himself be friendly, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother.
All right, so what's the message in that proverb thing? What's the wisdom?
You've got to be friendly to have friends.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. Mine says, what did your translation say again, Michelle, if you don't mind?
A man who has friends must himself be friendly.
Yeah.
But there's a friend who sticks closer than a brother.
Right, yeah. So that, we have to be friendly to have friends, right? Mine says something a little bit just slightly different. It says, a man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. So certainly, you know, in order to have friends, we need to be friendly. But I put here that true friends are better than many friends. You know, so I think we all understand that, hopefully, that kind of a quality versus quantity kind of a thing, that it's better to have a true friend who sticks closer than a brother than someone who just who can claim that they have many friends.
Hey, Jake.
Yes.
This is Ronnie.
Hey, Ronnie.
This New American Standard says a man of too many friends comes to ruin, and the footnote, ruin literally means to be broken in pieces. So almost like you're trying to have too many friends, and that's going to lead to maybe not getting, like you said, the quality of that you're looking for.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. You may be missing out on some of the things that we can have from true friendships, right? Like over in this is over in chapter 27, Proverbs 27 and verse 6, it says over there that faithful are the wounds of a friend, profuse are the kisses of an enemy. And then down in 17 of that chapter, probably one we're familiar with, iron sharpens iron and one man sharpens another. So some of those true benefits of friendship, you know, that someone's going to tell me what I need to hear when I need to hear it. And then, you know, we're going to sharpen one another. You may not get that if you're just someone who maybe you're, you know, somewhat close to a lot of people, but if we're missing those true friendships, then we're missing some of those benefits. So I think you're right, Ronnie. James, did you have your hand raised?
Yeah, it makes me think about the entourages that sports figures or music people have. They're not they're just companions. They're not really friends. They're around them just because of their fame or money. But those difficult times come, where are they?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's a sad sight, right? When in those cases, maybe all of a sudden they're not famous anymore or not as wealthy, and all of a sudden you look around and there's, you know, where are they to be found? So yeah, like we said there in the second point, that they're there for you at all times, right? Really become a brother during those difficult times. Yeah. Any other thoughts you guys had, I guess, on these passages or some of the wisdom about friendship?
Jake, the passage that Michelle read a minute ago is one of those places where the King James and other translations seem to be totally different, but there's truth in both of them.
Yeah.
It's certainly obvious that if we want to be have friends, we have to be friendly. Many times people complain about nobody wants to be my friend, but they're responsible for it because of the attitude they have that doesn't really attract friends.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They are quite different, but yeah, you're right that there's truth to both kind of thoughts being presented there. So,
yeah, that's one of the few places where there's just a total difference in the sentiment, but both are correct. Both are
absolutely
correct.
Yeah. Even more wisdom for us to chew on. Yeah. All right. I'm going to go ahead and move to what some things Solomon has to say about marriage. And again, he has, you know, a fair amount to say about the relationships between husbands and wives. And it's always interesting looking at these passages because you consider the person who's writing them, you know, who has 700 wives. You know, in any of these, none of these teachings about husbands and wives does he refer to having multiple spouses. So perhaps if you had to ask Solomon, you know, what's the better way, you know, he would even say that it's the one husband, one wife relationship. But he has a lot to say about it. Could someone read 18:22? Just whoever has that first. 18:22.
He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord.
All right. Yeah, you know, the scriptures always hold up marriage in such a high regard. You know, marriage is honorable, we see in the New Testament. And so, again, you know, marriage is such a blessed thing from God. And, you know, he's saying that, you know, having a companion for life is a good thing, you know, and that's the biblical good, not the way that we've kind of watered down that word by using it so much. But it is a truly good thing to find a wife, and I think we could probably say the same application for a husband. Why do you think? I think this was in Philip's lesson sheet. Why do you think it's important to remember in our marriages just this particular passage?
Well, I think it's easy to take.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I had the exact thought written down here to not take it for granted, right? I mean, we need to be reminded and remember that, you know, just what we have is a great thing, a good thing that we have something from God. Absolutely. Yeah. Anything else?
I think it's a good thing for a man not to join in when others are running their wives down, which is sometimes the case.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like I've got to be a part of this, so I join in and telling about how much of a problem my wife is. That's just not in order. Christian men need to respect their wives, not only in private, but in public as well.
Yeah. That's a great point. Great point. Yeah. If we're going to take the wisdom here and hold up, you know, our wife as this great thing, then yeah, we really ought not to run her down, even if those around us are doing that. So we can uphold her in many ways, especially, you know, in public and when we're talking to others. So, Yeah, and so the other part of the passage talks about obtaining favor from the Lord. Looking off his lesson sheet again, and so in what way do you think a spouse can lead to the Lord's favor? How do you think we obtain favor from the Lord in that way?
You can serve together and...
Yeah. Yeah, more good can be done with two, right, than one, hopefully.
Yeah. Hospitality would be easier with two.
Yeah. Go ahead.
God just plainly saw it was not good for man to be alone and gave him a wife.
Yeah.
And there are times when it maybe was too well to go without a wife, but there's always something can be done that's good if a person has a wife.
Yeah.
And you understand that sometime when you lose one.
I'm sure. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, when we hold up our companion is something so precious and so good, you know, I think we're prioritizing something and holding something that's important that God sees as important too, right? So we've prioritized and held something up that he does the same for, like you said, even from the beginning, you know, it's not good for man to be alone. You know, that's how God sees it. So when we see it the same way, you know, we of course obtain favor from him. Yeah. Yeah, and certainly the positive impact it can have on us, you know, like Aaron said, more, you know, there's more work, more good that can be done, being partners that way. And certainly children, can be raised. Obviously that's not the only way to please God, but it's certainly some good and some favor to obtain from God through doing that. So, any other thoughts on that particular proverb? It's a pretty rich proverb.
Well, I was also thinking about how they build each other up. You know, when one's down, they lift the other one up. And the goal is really to, you know, have somebody together to help each other make it to heaven.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, well said.
Jake, there's another passage that it fed off of one of the other passages that were in the lesson, chapter 19 and verse 14, it makes the same point that you've been talking about. It says, house and wealth are an inheritance from fathers, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. And never thought of it that way. He's contrasting really material blessings that come, you know, house and wealth coming from the inheritance that a father passes down, but a prudent wife. And the word prudent we talked about earlier, I think of the thought that prudent means appropriate, but a prudent wife or an appropriate wife is from God or from the Lord.
Yeah.
And Brother Sewell's comment a minute ago made me think too of, we may know Bill Simmons, he's a preacher in the Brotherhood, been around a long time, but anytime I've heard him preach, If he brought an example out in his lesson that pertained with his wife's name Ethel, I believe, he would always say something really positive and about his wife from the pulpit, and always remember that and think about that related to him.
Yeah, that's a good thoughts all around. I appreciate you sharing that. I think you're right, Ronnie, and how you're reading that 19 verse 14. I think he's kind of making a statement about relative value there. You know, house and wealth, I mean, you know, those are inherited from fathers, mindset. But a prudent wife, you know, but a wife of wisdom and discretion, that's something different altogether, right? That's she's from the Lord. And so, yeah, you know, like you said, with the example with the preacher, I mean, holding her up in that highest light in the way he talked about her, and like we already talked about, the way we talk about her to others, you know, we're gonna it's gonna be done reflecting what's said in this passage. Yeah. So let's turn over to chapter 21. Chapter 21. Somebody can read verse 9 and then verse 19.
You say Proverbs 21, 9 and 19?
Right, verse 9, yeah, and then skip down to 19.
Okay, I've got it. Better to live on a corner of the roof than share a house with a quarrelsome wife. And then verse 19. Better to live in a desert than with a quarrelsome and nagging wife.
All right, so pretty emphatic statements here. You know what's it like to live with a quarrelsome wife or a contentious wife? Well, you know, you do just about anything to get away from it, I think is what he's saying. And you know, we could, I think, probably put husbands in here as well and make those interchangeable. But you know, it's just about better to be anywhere else in the desert on top of the house than to be in the house with a contentious wife. So again, I think one of the questions from the lesson is, you know, how might we recognize if we've become contentious, other than our spouse says they're heading up to the roof?
Well, I think it's when you stop being thankful and you're starting to, it's a mindset, it's when you start looking for incongruencies or errors, and you're just wanting to point everything out, as opposed to the opposite, being thankful and, you know, building up and looking at everything positive instead of you're having a negative mindset.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Philip would probably be better equipped to, since he just preached those great lessons about marriage. You know, it made me think of some of the things he said about, yeah, like finding faults and picking and keeping score and things like that, right? I mean, those are certainly, I think, signs of contention, certainly, yeah. Yeah, and so, you know, if thinking about the things we've talked about just before this, if we recognize, you know, the great thing that we have, that it's who that she or he is from, you know, from the Lord, and we have certainly, you know, humility, that we've seen, you know, our attitude should be in other lessons. You know, if we have those things, you know, we should be able to keep the contention pretty low. So any other thoughts, I guess, here on, again, we don't have time to unfortunately cover real deep on all of these. Any other thoughts on maybe the wisdom related to marriage? I'll actually click on my slides.
This may be where we get the reflection of his many wives. He knew that a prudent wife was a gift from the Lord, but a contentious one was not that kind.
Yeah, he certainly had a big sample size to kind of. He probably had you know, some more contentious than others, I'm sure. Yeah. All right, let's see what time it is. We're good on time here. All right, lastly, Solomon certainly has some things to say regarding parenting, the parent-child relationship. Turn over to, so let's look over in chapter 4. Over in chapter 4. I think we have a great example in that, you know, the first 9 chapters there were really written, you know, from a father to a son. So we have kind of a great example there on kind of maybe what the primary activity of a parent is for a child. I'm going to read just the first 4 verses of chapter 4. It says, "Hear, O sons, a father's instruction, and be attentive that you may gain insight. For I give you good precepts, and do not forsake my teaching. When I was a son with my father, tender, the only one in the sight of my mother, he taught me and said to me, let your heart hold fast my words, keep my commandments, and live." And I'll just stop there. And, you know, over in chapter 1 as well, in verse 8, is that passage where it talks about, "Hear, my son, your father's instruction, Forsake not your mother's teaching, for they are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck. So I think we see that the primary activity of parenting, if you will, is teaching or instruction. We certainly have responsibility to keep our children safe and healthy and all those things, but, you know, our primary role is teaching them, instructing them, certainly about things about God and you know, the wisdom that we see in this book and righteousness and those spiritual principles. Our primary activity is teaching and instructing. And I think the book shows a couple main principles in carrying out, I guess, this primary activity or role. Let's turn over to, they're both in chapter 22. Chapter 22, can somebody read verse 6 whenever you get there? 22, verse 6.
Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it.
All right. So probably a fairly well-known passage there. But, yeah, I love that idea there of, you know, if you want to look ahead years down the road and see your child on this path or on the path, that, you know, the righteous path, the wise path we've been talking about in this book, then we've got to actually train them for that path. We've got to actually, when they're young, set them on that path. If we want to look down the road and see them on that path. And I love that kind of that word, you know, training them. We're going to talk about discipline in a minute, but I think the idea of training them is much broader than just discipline, right? You think about, you train someone to do really anything, right? You show them the right way to do it. You know, you're of course giving them verbal instructions, but you may point to other people who do something the right way and say, look how they do it. Practice certainly. So you may require you know, practicing certain behaviors that you want your children to learn. And so, you know, if we want our children to follow, again, this path we've been talking about, we've got to train them from an early age to set them on that path. And it, you know, I think the teaching here is that it sticks with them. This is obviously a case where we have to remember Proverbs are, I guess, generally true. They're not true in an absolute sense, meaning every single time, every single case. We certainly know of cases where I think parents have been there absolute to the best of their ability, have trained their children, yet when they grow old, they do forsake the path. But, again, thinking from a generally true sense, if we train our children on the way he should go, that when they're old, that will stick with them. Yeah, open it up to you guys who are much wiser than me, but what are your thoughts or comments?
Jake, I think, like, training in this activity, I think of a garden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I train a tree in the way it grows, I have to prune some branches off to shape it well and such, and sometimes when you're training, there's pruning that has to go on. That could be pruning activities or thoughts or whatever. And it's the same thing when I cut the grass. I'm training it to grow a certain way. So when I think of training our children, sometimes I think of that yes, there's a little pain. Maybe you're taking things away, but you're shaping them in the way they should grow. But eventually, a smaller tree will turn into a, you know, a beautiful, large, well-shaped tree, in a sense. So I think of it like that.
Yeah, that's a great way to think about it. Yeah.
And the parent needs to have in mind the way he wants the child to grow.
Yeah.
It's not just set out and day by day, but you have a long-range plan of what you want them to be when they're 10 years old, when they're 15, when they're 20. And then keep that in mind every day in prayer and your relationship with them.
Absolutely, yeah. It makes me think of some of those passages we talked about related to diligence, right? If we want to be diligent parents, and we talked about how, you know, the plans of the diligent, what, you know, lead to outcomes and results. So certainly parenting is somewhere where we need to plan, like you said, you know, what we want them to know by this age or this age, and certainly accompany with prayer. And but yeah, I mean, having plans and some intent behind what we're doing. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Again, I mentioned the idea of practice, you know, and it's been impactful to us, observing examples that at Embry Hills, for example, this one comes to mind, you know, if you want your children to, when they grow older, to be well equipped to, you know, greet visitors and to go up to other members and speak to them and ask how they're doing. Well, we have members, and you guys probably know of some of them that, you know, make their children do that at each service. Go up and find a visitor or find, you know, X amount of members and go talk to them. And that training or that practice, you think that's going to lead them to a place where when they're older, that's what they're going to be able to do? I think so, right? And so things like that, practicing and training them to behaviors that we want them to have later on is important, I think Solomon would say. All right. And then certainly, I'll skip down to 22 and verse 15. I'll go ahead and read that. 22:15 says, "Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far away." So certainly, you know, training and discipline, again, there may be some overlap there, but discipline is certainly going to have a key role in raising our kids. And I think it's, as a parent, it's always kind of good to go back to this. I think the purpose of discipline that's given in this passage, that it's about driving out folly, the folly that's bound up in the heart of a child. And, you know, we know that children have that natural folly, foolishness to them. You know, we're not talking about sin, of course, but children don't understand even basic foolishness, like the stove is hot or don't run into the road and things like that. And certainly more important things like self-control and sharing and things like that. I mean, they just naturally don't understand things. So there is that natural folly. And so the place of discipline is there to drive out what's naturally bound up inside of them. Not for any other purpose of discipline, like, you know, because we can't control our emotions or something like that, but it's for the purpose of driving out the folly. And I think there's maybe, you know, perhaps a lesson there about us not being too frustrated with them either, not overly frustrated with them, understanding that folly is just something that's bound up in their hearts, right? So while we may let them know that, you know, you should know better by now and communicate that to them, you know, we ought not to become overly frustrated realizing that folly is something that all children have. And maybe also make another point that if that's the purpose, to drive out folly from children, then if something we're doing discipline-wise is not working, maybe we need to try something else. You know, I don't think that the teaching here is that, you know, corporal punishment is the only way, but there's some discretion to be used there, that if something we're doing is not accomplishing what the purpose is mentioned here, then, you know, maybe we need to try something else to do that. So I think there's a lot of lessons wrapped up here in just this one verse. Any other, I guess, thoughts on those?
Jake, just as children need to be taught that touching a hot stove has consequences and playing in the street has consequences, they also must learn that disobedience to parents and disobedience to God have consequences as well. And we have to administer the consequences when they're small, but they learn the lesson that way. And if they don't learn to suffer something for their disobedience, then they're going to go the rest of their lives without earning it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'll read real quick over in chapter 19 and verse 18. Chapter 19, verse 18 says, "Discipline your son, for there is hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death." I think some of the other translations say, "Discipline your son while there is hope." And so there's this, you know, I think wisdom here about the fact that there's some limited time, maybe to teach children some things that, you know, there's some urgency to it because it may be harder the older they get with certain things. I know Philip in his lesson had several, what are some lessons that are critical to teach in each stage? And he gave different stages of childhood. And we won't go through all those one by one, but did you guys have any there? Maybe if you want to give from any age, maybe some important lessons that really need to be learned by a certain age, or examples of maybe the urgency we should have.
Jake, we said, I'll go through them real quick. We said, like birth to preschool is obedience, simple task. And then elementary, middle, respect, and then work ethic, just teaching them basic chores in, with the obviously when you give them a chore, they have to have the understanding of exactly what your expectation of it is.
Yeah.
And then when you teach them to work young, then they'll know to work when they get older. Or at least I would hope that. And then we say like teen and young adults, accountability and purpose, consequences, what Phil said. Yeah. And then what your purpose for is, finding their purpose.
Earlier
consequences too, he said as well.
Yeah,
when they're younger.
Yeah, we don't start when they're teenagers.
Yeah, you can't.
Late.
You can't teach them.
You're done.
Early, you know, later the consequence. Yeah, that's me. It's earlier.
Yeah, teen years may have different consequences, but the idea of consequences, right, mm-hmm. from an early age. Yeah. Yeah, those are all great. I'm trying to write some of those down. I wrote down like respect for authority. I think obedience is very similar there. You know, if children can't learn to respect our authority as parents, and when they get to school, what's that going to be like? Or when they, we're on a team or something like that, it's going to be difficult at that point and hard work. You know, I wrote down sharing, maybe just where I am in parenthood right now. You know, if you don't teach them about things like sharing that may not look so nice as they get older. So, those are great, great thoughts.
Well, the other thing too is what you were saying, like teaching your children like at an early age about greeting and helping to incorporate, like include other kids, become inclusive and not exclusive.
Yeah.
Is that something, that you'll use all your life?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a great discipline and lesson to learn when you're young.
Jay?
Yes.
Hey, I was going to say, this was probably something we as adults have to remember, is that we're modeling all the time in front of our children, so we can, as they say, dish out a lot of instruction and rules and regulations, but what they're going to follow, tentatively follow, is what we're doing. Do they see us greeting? Do they see us working? How do they see us working? What are those examples? I mean, we can literally talk all day, but it's what they remember and what they see, as we see in Jesus, what we're looking at as his examples. Yeah. That's what they're going to do. So even starting young, it's always, like we say, it's everything's a teachable moment, but we are teaching with our own lives as well. So just something I have to remind myself of.
Yeah, I may have said this in one of the other classes, I'm not sure, but I remember some things. I remember a fair amount of things my parents told me when I was young, but I remember a lot more about the things they did. You know, I can remember like things my dad did in certain situations or my mom did or didn't do. You know, that stuck with me a lot more than, again, like that time they told me this. It's the things that they did, how they handled situations that I think are really impactful on children. And yeah, I need to remind myself that too as a parent quite often.
Right. And the strange thing is once they do learn to talk and tell you that you didn't do what you said that you told me to do, then you start regrouping.
When they start calling you out, yeah, you know, you're
right.
Yeah. Thanks, Kara. Yeah.
Jake, you remember what they told you because you had learned to respect them for what they were.
Yeah.
And that's important, as Vera has said.
Yeah, absolutely. So last slide I have here as we're getting low on time is just some principles maybe essential to all relationships. And that one is you know, steadfast love. 19, verse 22 says, what is desired in a man is steadfast love, and a poor man is better than a liar. So, you know, hopefully we can see in all three of the areas we talked about tonight that steadfast love and faithfulness is certainly important in those relationships. Maintaining our righteous character. 20 verse 7 says, the righteous who walks in his integrity, blessed are his children after him. So certainly, you know, maintaining our righteous character in all those relationships. And then lastly, when others are hoping in us, we do our best to not disappoint. And I'll explain what I mean by that. And this is one that Philip and I were emailing about. I'm going to read 13 and verse 12. 13 and verse 12 says, hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a desire fulfilled is a tree of life. So it's the idea that you know, hope and desire, you know, it's much better when those things are actually fulfilled than when they're not, right? That can cause us, you know, heartache and you know, pain to our core when hopes or expectations are not met. And, you know, certainly there's a lesson here that God is the only one who can, you know, truly, you know, fulfill this passage perfectly in that he's never going to let us down. He's always going to fulfill our hope, but you know, people are just not going to do that. You know, people are going to let us down, certainly. I think the lesson in what we've talked about tonight is that when people, you know, have hope in us and have reasonable expectations for us, like our spouse or our children or our friends, that you know, we are people who do our job in those relationships and don't disappoint, and you know, because that can hurt them. As the passage says, right? So can that be hurtful to our children if I'm not the father that they're expecting me to be? Certainly. And same way with my wife and being the husband that she hopes I can be, and same with friendships. And so all that, I think the passage is a very important but general principle. I think that there, you know, maybe there is a lesson we can take in what we've talked about tonight. So I wanted to not leave the class without noting that particular one. All right. Any other thoughts or comments from you guys?
Excellent class, Jay.
You appreciate it all.
Good lesson for all of us.
Appreciate the wisdom from you guys. All right. Well, I'll stop the recording. You guys are welcome to stay on, of course.
All right. Thank you, Jake. Good job.